Welcome to On the Mic Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, I sit down with a longtime friend of mine, Nate Bagley. Nate and I finally had a chance to meet up and talk about a new project that he's been working on for about the last year here called the Love You Mentory. I would see Nate posting things on Facebook and on social media about this project, and I was really intrigued to learn more about the Love You Mentory. Like I said, Nate and I go pretty far back. We first met each other in 7th grade biology, so back when we were 12 years old or so. And we've remained friends ever since. It was kind of crazy because I don't think Nate and I have actually seen each other since we graduated high school in 2002, just to date us a little there. But it was great to catch up and learn more about the Love You Mentory, as well as a new project that Nate has coming out called Unboxed Love that he's planning to release in March. So just a little bit of background on what the Love You Mentory is. It's a project that Nate was able to get going that basically follows a bunch of love stories all the way across the country. Nate talks about his travels everywhere from East Coast to West Coast and shares some of those great love stories, really questioning if true love still exists. So I really hope you guys enjoy this episode. I know it's a little bit of a step aside from talking to comedians and actors, but I thought this was a great story and a great project that Nate's working on. And I think you guys will enjoy it. I think you guys will learn a lot from this. I really appreciate everybody's support. I've had just some great comments coming from people through both Facebook, Twitter, and even email. So always hit me up. I'd love to know who's out there, who's listening, and what you guys think of the episodes. If you weren't aware, you can now also download the episode on Stitcher Radio. Maybe you're listening to it on Stitcher now. But we have it available now, Stitcher and iTunes, and hopefully soon as well on Spreaker. So yeah, we're getting it out there to fill your ear holes the best that we can. This week we'll be getting also ready to launch the Kickstarter campaign for our new show, The Job Interview. We also have an episode coming up where you guys will get to meet everybody else in the cast and kind of get to know what the show's about that we've kind of been rambling on about. And I know we've posted a few pictures, so it'll be great to share a little bit more about that. But thank you so much for all the support. Like I said, it really means a lot. It's great to contact with people, get in contact with people that, are all over the country to find out, that they're actually listening and enjoying the show. So please continue to send the messages. Even if you hate something, tell me. I'd love to make sure that, I get both sides of the spectrum here. Make sure you get on iTunes if you haven't already. Rate the show. Help us climb up those iTunes charts and get more people listening. And I hope you guys enjoy this episode with Nate Bagley as we talk about the Love You Mentory and Unbox Love. Check it out on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Enjoy the episode.
Let's hit it.
Actually, get this thing rolling.
Oh, it's rolling.
Yeah, it's rolling now.
Now I'm nervous.
So, yeah. But yeah, I'm glad you were able to finally, to come down, especially with such short notice. Usually I'll mention to somebody, hey, let's sit down for an interview, and like 2 months later.
It helps that I live just a couple miles up the street.
So. How long have you been back in Utah? Because you were living in Florida for a while.
I've been
you?
Everywhere, man. So the last couple of years, about 2 years ago, I was living in Florida. I left there about 2 summers ago. I lived in Austin for a couple of months. And then I ended up moving back to Salt Lake for a few months. And then I was out in San Francisco for about a month and a half. Wow. And then back in Utah for about the last year. But I've been traveling so much that I haven't felt like I've lived here. I've just been...
You've basically been living in the back of your car.
Yeah, in a sense. Well, I'm fortunate enough to have parents who are really supportive and let me crash in their basement. So I'm that guy. I'm the 30-year-old guy who lives in his parents' basement and sits down, plays
on his computer. There's nothing wrong with that,
though. Well, some would argue. I think some would argue that there is something wrong with that.
When you're following your dream, though, I know my buddy Dave. He's Neon Tree's tour guitarist.
Uh huh.
But it's like he's never home enough to need to have anywhere else. And yeah, he's almost 30, but yeah, he just lives in his parents' basement.
I think my parents question that decision a lot less now that the last few weeks have kind of been really, really awesome. But like for the last year, they've been like, we're kind of worried. Are you planning on getting a job soon? Like I've been driving taxis and substitute teaching elementary school classes just to have a little bit of cash here and there. But yeah, the last week when they kind of saw a bunch of stuff blow up, I was really fortunate. They've kind of been like, oh, we're so proud of you. And I'm like, finally, yes.
See, I've never, it's like, I feel like my family's somewhat
proud of it, but it's like, it's not what they want me to be doing at all. Right. So it's like, to a degree, they're like,
I don't doubt that they were ever proud. I think that they just like, it's easy to question because it's not what they envisioned for you.
Yeah.
And so when you're doing something completely different, it's like, oh, we're just happy that you're happy, instead of like, I don't know. I think a lot of parents just want their kids to grow up and have what they have, but better.
Yeah.
So when they see you choosing a completely different lifestyle,
like, and something that's really hard to do too.
Yeah. Then they kind of go, well, that's not what we thought. It just takes them by surprise, I think. So
I mean, I was almost done with a bachelor's degree in business before I was like, you know what, this sucks. Like, I was bored in my classes.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm gonna go to film school.
Yeah. I realized that's kind of what hit me is I was running out of money, and I'm like, I have like, I was a communications grad. I have a lot of experience in internet marketing. Like, I'm pretty good at what I did, I should say, not what I do. But the idea of going back and sitting in a cubicle all day, staring at a computer screen, I was like, no way.
Yeah, it's
I am not doing that.
It's painful to even think of. And I mean, I've had to, you know, jump into, you know, temp jobs and stuff like that just to be like, you know, I need extra money to do this.
Yep.
But it's like, sometimes you need that those extra funds. And it's like, you read a lot of, you know, young film producers or young comedians, some of the crazy things they had to do to be able to start up. I recently read A Rebel Without a Crew. That was Robert Rodriguez, a story of how he got started. And he actually put himself into like clinics where they would do medical testing on you.
Oh my gosh.
To be able to raise money to finance his films.
That's awesome.
And I'm just like, where can I find one of these places? Yeah.
I get $20 for donating plasma, right?
Yeah.
How many times a week can I do that?
He got for like a month, like $3,000 for doing this program for like a month, because people can go insane. That's
bonkers.
And I was just like, I would totally do that. Like,
yeah. I've been researching house sitting. There's a website called trustedhousesitters.com, really? And super rich people who have multiple homes will like leave, and they need people to just come sit in their house and make sure their pets don't die for like 2 months or something like that, all over the world. And I'm like, I just want a place to just like sit and write or edit through all these freaking podcasts that I have recorded. Like, and I don't want it to be in my parents' basement anymore. So I'm like, well, what if I could afford a ticket to France or to Mexico and just like in somebody's beach house for 2 months.
That would be amazing.
I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, that would be a pretty amazing experience.
Yeah, I'm learning. The more this weird kind of nomadic lifestyle that I live, the more I realize there's a lot of people who do it, and they live a lot more cheaply and happily than a lot of people who make a lot of money but have a lot of stuff, you know.
Yeah, and it's something that I've kind of had to learn that the hard way. Really, I mean, as we sold our house, it was like, you know, we were all gung-ho about it. We're like, sweet, we're selling our house, we're making some good money on this. And as we were loading up the moving truck, getting ready to move to LA, like, my wife was kind of like, you just have a lot of crap.
It's like that George Carlin sketch.
Yeah.
How he talks about stuff, and then every time you get more stuff, you need a bigger place to store your stuff.
Yeah. and that was exactly it. And it was like, we were moving from like a 5-bedroom house to a 1-bedroom apartment.
Yeah.
And so it was really kind of like, wow, I really just have a lot of crap.
Yeah.
And it's like, some of it has, you know, that sentimental value, but a lot of it literally just was crap.
Yeah.
It was like, I'd be too lazy to shred papers or something. So I'd be like, oh, I'll just make a pile to shred, and I'll get to those later.
Yeah.
And like, my wife comes upstairs with this box of, like, massive box, and she's like, what are you doing with this? Like, I was like, I'll get to that. And she's like, get to it, like, within the next 24 hours, because we're not bringing this to LA. This cannot happen.
I remember when I left Florida, I drive a Mini Cooper, and I was like, I'm not renting a trailer to move all this shit back to where it came from. Like, I already paid once to move it from Utah to Florida. I'm not paying to move it all back from Florida to Utah. So I went through and literally got rid of everything. I got rid of all my furniture. I cut my wardrobe in half like 3 times.
Yeah, that's what I'm in the process of
and
doing.
And I still look at stuff and I'm like, I don't wear that. Like, I need three. When I did this cross-country trip over the last couple of months, I packed like a duffel bag, and there's still stuff in the duffel bag that I didn't use while I was on the trip. I'm like, I was on the road for 3 months with one duffel bag. Like, how much stuff do I have at home that I never use that I just don't need?
Yeah, that's so. My family likes to tease me a lot, because for all the years I was working in music and working with bands and different labels and clothing lines, I would get just so much free crap thrown at me, where it's like, yeah, I didn't buy clothes for quite some time.
Right.
And now it's like
it's like your swag is waiting and reproducing in your closet.
It really is. Like, I have more clothes than my wife does. Like, I have more shoes than my wife
does. Are you confident you want to admit that?
I always confidently admit it. My wife just thinks it's hilarious.
That's awesome.
I mean, she gets a lot of clothes, but her dad growing up was kind of a pack rat and still is. I mean, we go over to his house and everything we joke is relish. And it's like peaches from 30 years ago that he's eating on his eggs. And we're like, I'm pretty sure you shouldn't be eating that.
Right.
But so she kind of had to grow up seeing that. And so, like, she's quite the minimalist when it comes to a lot of things. And so she's always just like, are you using this or not? And so it's been great for her to get me into that mindset.
Right.
Where it's like, yeah, I don't need that. I mean, some of these boxes you can see behind you are just full of CDs.
That's awesome.
Because I would just get so much. I mean, even these right here on the table are just samplers that I've just had handed to me. And so it's like, yeah, I don't need, you know, 100 samplers. And like, we've already got rid of like 5 boxes of just like junk that we've had from you know, going on different tours and stuff like that. So it's good to finally like de-junk and be able to be out of that. And you know, if I end up moving back to LA here, like we were talking earlier, you know, I'll have to do that, you know, a duffel bag of clothes that...
It feels good, man.
I bet.
Feels good. It feels good to declutter your life and be like, this is everything I need.
Yeah.
Nothing more.
It's nice to be able to breathe. It's like I still kind of feel claustrophobic with a lot of it, but it's like I'm able to breathe now.
Just a laptop and a change of underwear. That's all I need.
Yeah, that's... I should try to do that just for a week. Just a change of underwear and my laptop.
Maybe six changes of underwear. Do your laundry once a week. Yeah. When your laundry consists of like 4 t-shirts, 1 pair of pants, and 5, 6, or 7 changes of underwear, like, it's pretty easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. I'm going to make a goal now to adjust to that.
Let me know how that goes for you.
So now, I mean, one of the main things we wanted to talk about today was, you know, as you talk about, you know, going cross country and everything here, is this project you've been working on called the Love You Mentory.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I read a little bit about it on your website, and I mean, I love one of the things you wrote is that, you know, you started this as you were trying to work through your ever-growing feelings of cynicism and frustration with love.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved that description of it. But, I mean, tell me a little more about how this really started and, you know, how it started to flourish the way that it has.
Yeah, I'm turning 30 next month, and I was getting older, obviously, and we met in high school.
Middle school.
Yeah, we were part of friends in middle school.
7th grade science.
Yeah. But we come from this community where there's a lot of pressure to get married young.
Yeah.
And so I was getting older. I've kind of passed the age of when most quote-unquote normal people get married. Yeah. And I just, like, I felt a lot like a failure. And then at the same time, like, marriage is something I didn't want to screw up in my life. So I noticed that a lot of the conversations around marriage tended to be either really negative and cynical and... You know, people, guys would refer to their wife as the ball and chain. Women always kind of talk about their husbands like they're stupid. You turn on sitcoms, that's kind of the message that's portrayed. And you turn on the news and it's all about like scandals and infidelity and cheating and abuse. And, you know, you've got Chris Brown beating Rihanna and you've got Tiger Woods cheating on his wife and like all these just crazy stories. There's not a whole lot of uplifting stuff.
Right.
And then on the other hand, you get a lot of conversations. I think this is really popular, especially among kids. There's really... hyper-sensationalized, over-dramatic love, like a lot of like Twilight, Disney movies, this whole unrealistic expectations type love.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like nobody ever gives you a real insight into what really works. And that's what I want. I was like, okay, if I'm going to get married one day, I don't want to screw it up. And I think the best way to do that is maybe to talk to people who are doing it right. So I started talking to people and I'm like, man, these conversations are really good. I should start recording them because I think other people would benefit from them.
Right.
And then the rest is just kind of history. It's just kind of ballooned and ballooned and ballooned. And then I ended up over the end of 2013, I got to do a 3-month road trip with my friend Melissa, who we actually met in person for the first time on the first day of our trip.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we ended up driving 15,000 miles across the country and interviewing like 100 couples about what it's like to be in love. And it was just like this crazy, eye-opening, life-altering experience. So
So how did you end up then getting to know Melissa beforehand? Is it...
We were introduced through a mutual friend. Our friend Amber was like, hey, you guys should meet each other. Melissa, earlier in the year, had written a bucket list of things that she wanted to do before she died. And one of the things on her list was she wanted to write a book after interviewing 100 couples about what it's like to be in love. And she's like, and Amber saw that and was like, you need to meet Nate because this dude's already interviewing people. And it sounds like you guys could maybe benefit from each other. So we Skyped a few times, planned out the trip, and she came out here and we hit the road. So
you guys did a Kickstarter to back that.
Yeah, we did. We raised about $30,000.
Wow.
And we were really fortunate to have a lot of supportive friends and family and a couple of really great sponsors like Couple App. I don't know if you've ever heard of Couple. Uh-huh. It's pretty awesome. It's like a social network for two people. So it's like this app that you can like send pictures and back and forth and make appointments with each other and like set reminder dates for your anniversaries and birthdays.
Oh,
and,
cool.
There's this cool thing called the thumb kiss where you hold your your finger on the screen and then it alerts the other person. They hold their finger over the top of where your finger is and it like buzzes. It's corny, but it's kind of cool.
It's an interesting concept.
Yeah, it's super interesting. So they helped us get around the country as well. And it was just, it's been weird, man.
So, did you guys start in Salt Lake then doing interviews?
Yeah, we started in Salt Lake and then we hit LA, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, Boise, Denver, Boulder, and then just kept going across the entire Midwest, like Kansas City, Omaha. And then we hit the East Coast and started to clear up in like Boston and went down through DC, New York, all the way down to Miami.
And how are you finding the couples to do this?
Typically, it was through our own network of people, like friends of friends. And a lot of it actually was just talking to people about what we were doing. And, you know, you show up in somebody's town and they're like, oh, what are you doing here? Oh, we're interviewing couples who are in love. Oh, my gosh, I know the perfect couple for you. You have to meet so-and-so. And we're like, okay, give me their number. I'll give them a call. And that was some of our favorite interviews happened through complete happenstance, like just talking to a complete stranger. And all of a sudden, that night we end up in some random person's house and like everybody's crying and talking about like these amazingly just incredible love stories that are real. So it was really surreal, I think, to be in a different person's house almost every day and like not know who they are, learn their first name, and then sit down and have them open up about like struggling with infertility or watching their children choose different things or having gone through like infidelity issues or, you know, somebody loses faith in their religion or like just these struggles that people have gone through, mm-hmm. you know, people who've had cancer or they've both gone through divorce and had to like relearn how to love themselves. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like, this is real life. And I can't believe these people are telling me these things, but I'm so glad they did. So.
Yeah, it's not just, you know, the fairy tale that you see.
No, there's no such
thing. In a Nicholas Sparks book or something.
Yeah,
like that.
That was the coolest thing is realizing that the strongest couples have probably gone through the most hardship. And I had no idea. Like you get this assumption growing up that like, at least I think the biggest, most important thing I learned was that a relationship is not supposed to make you happy. Like the foundation of your relationship shouldn't be, am I happy all the time? I think a real healthy long-term relationship is based on personal growth. And if you're constantly growing and stretching yourself and pushing yourself and the other person, and you're both feeling that type of growth, the happiness will come. And in my past relationships, I think whenever I've reached a point of conflict, I just pulled the escape hatch, and it's really easy to just be like, this isn't meant to be because I'm not happy anymore.
Right.
And now I know that's false. Like that's totally something that's been fabricated through the media or through movies or Nicholas Sparks books or whatever that's been ingrained in our culture. Like, hey, when there's conflict, it's probably not right. When in reality, maybe that's exactly what you need, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, like my wife and I, we tell people all the time, we've never fought. Like we don't have any reason to. I mean,
right.
We might have a disagreement or something, mm-hmm. but I mean, it's like we looked at it and even like right before we were getting married, I remember we'd sat down, you know, with somebody at the church we were going to at the time and, you know, to give us that marriage prep talk.
Right.
And it was honestly 2 hours of him telling us over and over and over again, you're going to fight.
And you have
you're
to
going
fight.
To fight. And we both just looked at him and we're like,
he's probably speaking from his own experience. Yeah.
And we were just like, no, we probably won't. He's like, oh no, it'll happen. We're like, no, because both of us look at it as, that's not going to matter in 10 minutes. What the hell's the point of yelling about it?
Yeah.
If it's not going to matter in an hour, what's the point?
Yeah, that perspective is just so helpful.
Yeah, and it's made it great in people all the time. And we've had people tell us, oh no, fighting's good for you. And we're like, really? I don't think that many divorced couples are like, you know, thank God we fought. We never right. would have. I mean, we made it here now.
Yeah. I'm reading this really interesting book by John Gottman right now. And he's talking about how different couples have different fighting styles.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, some couples, they just don't need to fight. They just don't. And some couples have incredibly healthy relationships, but they totally have like knockdown, drag out, passionate disagreements. But at the end of the day, the most important thing is the friendship.
Right.
Like, because when me and my best friend have a fight, like, even if it's pretty nasty, like a day later, we can laugh about it and be like, it's cool, man. I'm sorry. You know, get over it. And I think a lot of couples don't have that type of friendship where they can just take a deep breath and let go of it. They hold on to that grudge. They take it personally. They don't let it go. I think that's where the big conflict comes in. Mm-hmm. But I think the majority of my friendships, I don't fight either. And I'm hoping that in my relationship down the road, I mean, a disagreement here and there is totally fine, but I don't enjoy that type of.
And not to get too tabloidy, but
let's get tabloidy.
But I mean, for example, like the Kardashians, where you know, it was all over the news a few months ago, Kris Kardashian and Bruce Jenner are divorcing, and then it turns out they didn't actually divorce, they just moved out of the house together.
Right.
And I thought that was so crazy. And like, I've seen, you know, Kim Kardashian on like the Tonight Show and they've brought that up. They're like, no, they work better, you know, not living in the same house. They're best friends. They're together all the time.
Right.
But they just can't live in the same house as each other. And I was like, that's crazy. I mean, cool that works for them, but
right.
Yeah, I thought that was just bonkers that that's how.
Yeah, I've learned that there are as many definitions to love and ways to make it work as there are couples who are in love. I think when a lot of people expect a specific recipe,
mm-hmm.
and like it's so funny. I did this Reddit AMA a couple weeks or last week, and so many people were looking for specific. Like, well, what do you do when this happens, or what do you do in this when this happens, or it's like, well, it just depends on the person. Like, different people handle different situations differently, you know. And for the Kardashians in this situation, maybe what they needed was some space from each other and it helped their relationship. Awesome. That doesn't mean it's a universal law that everybody needs to like separate from each other and live in different houses if they don't get along all the time or whatever.
And most people don't have that financial
being
too to just be like, I'm just going to go buy
house. I guess they could always go live in their car, right?
Yeah. They could always just go live in their car. That could work for them. So now, to take it back just a little bit.
Let's go back.
Before you even, you know, started getting those feelings, as you know, you're getting older and, you know, everyone's giving you that pressure. You know, in high school and stuff, you know, where everybody really kind of starts their dating life. I mean, did you feel the same kind of pressure then? I know for me, you know, part of middle school into high school, you know, you mentioned the portrayal of media.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at myself now and I'm like, yeah, that saturated my young brain quite a bit. And I was the ridiculous, hopeless romantic that, you know, most girls in our school, I think, was like, that guy has issues. Because it was just like, I just want to date you. Look at me. And I was the cheesy, you know, put notes in their locker. And
we were the cheesy.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure there were many girls that considered restraining orders at the age of 15.
Right.
And I mean, I look at the shows we were watching then were probably like The OC and some of those where it was like
Friends.
Yeah, Friends
was really popular.
And I look at it now. I don't know if you saw Don John.
Yeah, I love that movie.
And I mean, I thought it was funny that so many people were like, oh, this is a movie about porn addiction. It's like that was such a, you know, minute part of it where it was really about relationships, and how media has misportrayed them. Where, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character is obsessed with women that he wants to be like the porn stars that he's watching. Whereas Scarlett Johansson was obsessed with romantic comedies.
The Prince Charming.
And that's what she wanted him to be.
Yep.
And I loved that contrast. And I was like, I feel bad that so many people are going to miss out on this movie.
Yeah.
Because of the underlining tone to it.
I totally agree 100%. I feel like a lot of people got caught up on the porn commentary. When in reality, I think what Joseph Gordon-Levitt was trying to do is say, hey, like, is the way that we're approaching relationships the right way?
Yeah.
Like, maybe we should think about what's going on here. I mean, actually, if you look at 500 Days of Summer, one of his other films, it's not his film, but he starred in it. Mm-hmm. That's another great commentary on modern relationships. And I love what he's doing. I thought that was a really interesting film.
Yeah, I saw it up at Sundance prior to it being released in theaters. And I mean, there was a little bit more of an NC-17 rating to it at that time. But I mean, the way that they edited it down and, you know, made it what it is now, you know, it still delivers that powerful message that, got muddled through all of the porn talk to it. And, a lot of people missed out on a great message.
Yeah.
But, I mean, now you're giving them that same message.
A little differently. I think it's a pretty popular topic right now, at least judging by the response that everybody's had recently. There's a lot of people who are like, the way that everybody's, or the way I've been raised to think about love and relationships is totally screwed up and not right. So I'm just hoping that through these conversations and talking to people who do it right, maybe the idea is that I feel like most people base their behavior off of the examples and the role models that they have. And there just aren't that many public role models of what a great relationship looks like.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of positive role models of what an average relationship looks like, and even more of what a terrible relationship looks like. But the great relationships, they're typically spending their time focusing on creating a great relationship, not advertising that they have one. So I'm hoping that if I can get the microphone and maybe even a camera one day in front of these couples, that people's ideas of what they can have in a relationship and how to achieve it will completely change. And that's what I've noticed over the last few weeks is, as I've been telling people what I've learned, people are like, oh, that's possible. Wait, people have that? I can have that? Oh, like, it's like the light bulb turns on.
Yeah, it's a shock and awe factor for them that, you know, true love and great love stories do still exist outside of the idiot box and outside of books.
I've got this this buddy, his name's Josh Soler, and he lives in Kansas City, and he's married to a girl named Jenny. They have three little kids. And this is one of my favorite stories from the trip. They, a couple months ago, they were driving down the road. They had all three kids in the car, all under like the age of 9, I think.
Oof.
And
it's a rough trip.
Yeah. So they're driving in the car and it starts to rain. So like the whole family, I don't know. I'm just assuming that a car ride is pretty tough. A car ride in the rain just makes it a little tougher. So Josh pulls the car over into a parking lot and leans over to his wife, Jenny, and says, "Get out of the car." And she's like, "What?" And he's like, "Get out of the car." And she's like, "What? It's raining. I'm not going to get out of the car." And he's like, "We're going to make out in the rain." And she's like, "Are you serious?" And he's like, "Kids, do you want to get out and play in the rain?" And they're all, "No." And he's like, "Okay, you can sit in the car and watch me and mommy kiss then." And so they got out and made out in the rain. And I'm like, okay, so how many people are out there would actually take the time and have the thought to take a situation that most people would look at as either just normal or even maybe a little crappy, mm-hmm. and turn it into something that they'll never forget?
Yeah.
You know, they're the kind of couple that at the end of the day, after dinner, they wash the dishes together while their kids do homework. And then when they finish, they turn on a playlist of slow music and dance in the kitchen for a few minutes. And like they do these little romantic things that, once again, aren't perfect for everybody. But
it works for them.
It elevates their relationship to another level because they don't have to pull over the car and dance in the rain, and they don't have to dance in the kitchen or kiss in the rain and dance in the kitchen. But they take that 5 minutes and they go, "Hey, how can we connect today?" And there's so many relationships out there that just go about their daily life, and like they get it stuck in the monotony and the habit and the ritual of every single day, and
it becomes a robotic relationship. Yeah,
they forget, hey, we can take 5 minutes tonight and give each other foot massages, and that would feel great and really help each other relax. Or hey, when we kiss each other goodbye every day, let's make it like a real kiss. Let's make it last like 10 seconds long. Let's make out at least once a day. You know, and there's couples who do that, and but it adds just 10 seconds can add just a little bit more to that relationship that makes it just that much better, you know? And that's the message that I hope to portray to people, is that what they have can be better. If they have an average relationship, it can be awesome. If they have an awesome relationship, it can be even more awesome. And if they have a crap relationship, it's probably, you got stuff to work through, but you can do it and you can make it awesome.
And they can learn through these techniques and stuff too.
A lot of it's just little things. Like having a good, like reminding yourself what it was like to be friends.
Yeah.
You know, when was the last time you hung out with your spouse? It's I don't know.
And a lot of people, I think they feel that pressure of hanging out. And it's like, I know with my wife and I, like, you know, we don't necessarily know what's going to happen next week.
Right.
And we just roll with it. I mean, we always have a good time. We're always able to laugh. And I mean, I think part of that too is deeply rooted in comedy as both of us are. Yeah. It's just everything's, you know, somewhat of a joke to
us. Is she super into comedy as well?
She's become more and more and more into comedy as, you know, we spend a lot of time in comedy clubs, you know, meeting right. different comics, talking with different comics. Like, she's just become used to it. So, and it's like, you know, and that becomes like your main friend base too.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes it easier just to laugh at everything. I mean, granted, we're both probably more cynical than a healthy person should be, but we're both of us are that cynical. It makes it just that much more fun where, you know, we'll see a situation and we can just laugh at it. And, you know, most people, if people were passing by or listening in on that conversation, they'd be like, wow, those two are assholes.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're having a good time within our head.
That's great.
So, but I mean, it's a great experience. But I mean, I think it's funny, you know, you mentioned the kissing in the rain, and the first thing my mind goes to is right back to media of Jim and Pam on The Office when Jim proposes kissing in the rain
at the gas station, yeah. right?
And it's like, I think it's funny that my mind immediately goes to how media portrays right. that. So, and I mean, I don't think I ever would have thought of that.
Isn't that weird how story. It kind of all yeah. comes, it like media portrays this thing as being romantic and then. And then we just accept it as that. And I don't know. That's an interesting observation. I never really thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, I never would have expected my brain to go immediately to...
That's funny.
To media. I mean, granted, I'm, you know, working and doing stuff in film and radio. Life, and man. Yeah, it's like my brain already is saturated in the media. So, I mean, a lot of the times, yeah, my brain's going to go there. But I'm just thinking of a simple love story of dancing in the rain or making out yeah. in the rain. Yeah, I never would have expected my brain the first place to go to a TV show.
It's a TV show. That's funny. But that's, I mean, you can go back through generations in that type of situation. Even like Sound of Music why am I thinking of that? I don't know. But they have an awesome rain scene, I'm pretty sure. Doesn't it rain during the song I Am 16 Going on 17?
I believe so. I remember a...
And Liesl
like
dances
like an atrium or something like
that. Yeah, yeah. It's raining that? Outside. And Liesl's dancing with... What's his bucket? The guy who sells out and joins the Nazis. The delivery boy.
See, and all that my mind's so... even going with The Sound of Music was was last year's Oscars when Seth MacFarlane, you know, mentioned they have the family of...
Von Trapp family.
The Von Trapp family. And it's just a Nazi guy that comes to the door and says, they're not here!
That's so funny. Oh my gosh.
So now, as I mean, you guys talk to people from all different walks of life.
Yeah.
And one that really intrigued me was the people that that do sister wives.
Yeah.
Just here in family. Utah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that experience like? Where I mean, this is something where, you know, a lot of people look as, you know, this is not right. This is not yeah. normal. So where you're looking at true love stories, how was you know something that most people look at completely odd and strange. How did it compare to the other love stories that you guys came across?
I don't think I was more nervous for an interview than I was for that one. Because I was, like, scared. I was a little nervous because I was like, what if... Like, who knows what this is going to... You know, you just don't know. You're walking into this completely different lifestyle. You're walking to a family's home and, like... I didn't know if I was going to go in and be like, oh my gosh, these women are oppressed. And this is, like, this creepy cult. And walk out just feeling freaked out.
Yeah.
I ended up walking that home and I've never felt more love. It was bizarre. It like having these three women sit on a couch and their husband sit in this chair and just listen to them talk, like they're a family, you know, and they struggle with normal family things, but they care about each other. They help each other to raise each other's kids. And they struggle with one of the interesting things. I think one of the most interesting things is what they talked about, jealousy. And they said that, you know, jealousy is an issue in just about any relationship. It varies on the severity of it from time to time. And some couples don't have any jealousy whatsoever, which is cool. But for them, they see jealousy as like a carnal, they're some pretty religious family, but they see jealousy as like a carnal, like weakness. It's something that as humans we're given and that we have to overcome. And by putting themselves in a situation where they have to directly confront jealousy on a regular basis, because they have to share their husband, it actually makes them stronger, if that makes sense. They're putting themselves in a position where they're forced to confront their weaknesses and obstacles. And to them, that's like it's an opportunity for growth. And if you look at the history of all of these relationships, the best relationships that I've had the opportunity of sitting down and talking to these couples, all of them look at obstacles or challenges that hit their life, whether it's sickness, whether it's financial, whether it's spiritual, you know, it doesn't matter what, or emotional. They look at these challenges as an opportunity to grow and closer together. And so these people, like these three women and their husband, looked at every challenge eventually as a way to grow closer together and not as a way to push themselves away. And it was just a really interesting, it was, most families aren't a community, but their family was both a family and a community. And it was just really cool to sit down and see how these people live a completely different lifestyle. But, and I think an ill-perceived lifestyle. I think they get a bad rap because of the Warren Jeffs of the world.
Right.
Who, you know, there's crazy people in every ecosystem, if you will. Like, you know, you can go into religions and you can find crazy people. You can go into politics and find crazy people. And in this situation, you know, Warren Jeffs just happens to be the most prominent polygamous figure. But I think after meeting with them, I realized that there's probably a lot of polygamous families who are really happy with the lives they live and the love that they share. And it's actually a lot more healthy than we think.
And I mean, I've never watched their show, but just from, you know, what I've seen of them, they also seem to kind of live their life, you know, differently than what most people perceive as, you know, a polygamous family. I mean, every picture I've ever seen of them, you know, they're dressed like normal, normal everyday people instead of in the denim and you know,
they're not wearing their hair up in buns and their dresses to their wrists and their ankles and stuff like that. They're a lot more modern, and I think there's different types of polygamous families, and some
adhere to, and a lot of it's a lot more of their religious standard that they are adhering to.
Yep. So definitely an interesting interview. Definitely very, very eye opening, and it made me realize. Well, first of all, after doing a little bit of research, I realized that polygamy is actually the most widely practiced relationship structure in the world. Like, in most societies, polygamy is practiced, and especially historically, there was a lot more polygamy. As the world has become a little bit more westernized and Christianized, if you will, a lot of that has been frowned on. But even if you go back into Christian history, there's, like, you know, like King Solomon had concubines, and anyway, but that's a whole different discussion. But polygamy is actually not as weird as we think it is. We just think it's weird now because our community in our culture in the United States is very Christian, and Christians tend to frown on that type of
lifestyle. All about monogamy.
Yeah.
And not just monogamy, but between a man and a woman, and that is
that
is completely what they focus on.
Yeah. And there's a lot of arguments out there whether or not monogamy is natural. Some people argue yes, some people argue no, and
I've seen a lot of scientific write-ups that have basically said no.
Yeah,
we're pointing out that we're one of the only, I think it was the only mammals that actually are monogamous.
Yeah, there's a handful of mammals, but overwhelmingly mammals are not. They, you know, like dolphins have sex recreationally. I think chimpanzees also. Like, I mean, you can go through the list, and even reading, there's a book called Sex at Dawn. And it talks a lot about how we are not inherently monogamous. We make that decision. Like, if you go back centuries when we were living in tribes, you know, the tribe raised the children. It wasn't the mother and father unit. It was it was like an actual tribal setting, and everybody just had different roles, you know? And so, like, the inherent, the practice of monogamy, even nowadays, like, even if you are practicing monogamy, like, I don't think there's a person out there who won't randomly find somebody else attractive, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if somebody can't admit that somebody else is attractive, I mean, I think they're just nuts.
Yeah, you may not feel safe admitting that, which is totally understandable. Like, you're not going to go to your wife and be like, hey, I think so-and-so's hot, you know, and I want to sleep with her.
Yeah.
But inherently, in our genetics, that desire exists. And so even though we choose to be monogamous, I don't think it's an inherent human desire. I think innately, like,
that's how we're programmed.
We're programmed to want to have sex with other people sometimes. Whether or not we do that is our decision. So
Yeah, it's why dogs hump everything.
Right? Yeah. Well, and there's, and then, humans have the inherent risk factor. It's like, okay, so, you know, you weigh the risk versus the reward. So do I really want to, is it rewarding enough for me to sacrifice this relationship that I've cultivated for maybe 10 years to have sex with this person once? And even though the desire is there, the payoff is probably much lower. And that's why I think in a lot of unhealthy relationships, you're going to see a lot of infidelity, is because, like, if the risk is worth taking because you crave that connection or that commitment that you aren't experiencing in your own relationship, then the likelihood of infidelity goes through the roof. Because, like, if a guy's not, or a woman isn't sexually satisfied, or isn't experiencing emotional connection, or isn't experiencing validation, or isn't experiencing that friendship tie anymore, it's really natural for people to go look for that elsewhere. And if they feel that connection somewhere else, like, most, I was reading this, where was I reading it the other day? Might've been in that same book by John Gottman, said something along the lines of, infidelity is not a leading cause of divorce, because what causes infidelity, like, if you sit down and talk to people who got separated and divorced because of cheating, like, typically there are deeper
emotional, there were stepping stones.
There were stepping stones. Yeah. Like, we just weren't feeling it anymore. We weren't connecting. We grew apart. We weren't having sex anymore, whatever that case may be. That's what led up to the infidelity. It's not like somebody woke up one morning and was like, I want to have sex with somebody else. Like, there's a reason that starts. And if people worry about the small things and actually take care of the small things, the big things are never become an issue. So
that's,
I feel like I just rambled a lot. I'm sorry.
No, it's a really good point that I think a lot of people, you know, do miss out on. And I mean, even, or, you know, we just passed Valentine's Day last week, where, you know, a lot of people, if they aren't satisfied even with something as really, in my eyes, as silly as Valentine's Day, that, you know, that you know, kind of leads them down that same path.
Yeah.
And I mean, my wife and I hardly do anything for Valentine's Day. Both of us look at it as it's the dumbest thing in the entire world. Why do you set aside one day a year to be able to tell your significant other,
right,
hey, I care about you? Like, why can't you just do that? Why can't that just be your life?
Right.
So, I mean, both of us, I mean, we did absolutely nothing.
Yeah. It's amazing how many people don't invest in their relationships year round, and then they complain about Valentine's Day. So, I mean, it's one thing to be in a really good relationship and be like, we don't need this holiday to celebrate our love, but it's another thing entirely to see all these people who are super cynical about Valentine's Day, and it's like, well, you don't do anything ever.
Yeah.
Why can't you take one day and just make your relationship special? I mean, that's where it starts, is today. Like, if you can take today and have one connection, make one special moment today, great. And then make one tomorrow, make one the day after that, make one the day after that. And that's what makes a good marriage. Mm-hmm. That's what makes a good relationship, is the memories, you know? You look at your best friends, and the reason you're best friends is because you have a crap ton of awesome memories together. You do crazy stuff. You're out late at night, and you go push over cows, or, like, I don't know what, like, you know, you go to concerts together, you go crowd surfing, there's those crazy moments, you know, where just stuff happens. You almost get in a car accident and that ends up being a story. I don't know, like, but it's those moments that really are what a relationship is founded on. So go create those.
Yeah. And that's, and I think that's too, like, my wife and I were talking about it when we were kind of laughing about, you know, stuff with Valentine's Day, is, yeah, it's like, we have so many great memories. And never once has it been like, oh, there was this one Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we'll still do something small. It's not like we're anti-Valentine's Day. We'll do something, you know, teeny.
But it's like, remember that road trip? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's exactly it. We're like, oh, do you remember, you know, the first time we actually, you know, got to go out to L.A. to go to some of the small little Oscar festivities? It's like, that's something we're going to remember because we did it together and it was, you know, just a crazy experience. Instead of, you know, hey, do you remember those roses you got me that one year?
Yeah.
Yeah, can you step that up? It's nothing. And the other thing we always joke about with it too is Valentine's Day is actually a pretty bloody holiday. When you go through to the fact that Saint Valentine was beheaded,
right?
And I mean, you have the Saint Valentine's Day massacre. Yeah, let's celebrate it. So I mean, I've joked that I'm going to do an entire thing about, you know, the holidays that we celebrate, and how morbid most of them actually are.
Yeah,
I mean, Columbus Day. Columbus was a piece of shit. He was a terrible person.
Did you see the Oatmeal's commentary on Columbus Day last year? Oh, dude, you need to look that up. It's awesome.
I'll have to check that out. But I mean, like, Columbus Day is pretty terrible. Thanksgiving, pretty terrible. I mean, we like to have this. Oh, it's the day we talk about.
Showed up and slaughtered a nation.
Yeah, but we teach everybody. Oh, it's a day we're thankful for things.
Right.
Yeah, you're thankful for the land that you pillaged from the Native Americans.
Yeah.
And it's like, that day's a pretty terrible day.
Christmas is totally a pagan holiday.
Yeah, Saturnalia, solstice. Too. Yeah. I mean, it's just silly the way that when you break it down, even today, being, you know, we're here on President's Day.
Uh-huh.
It's like, those early settlers, I mean, how do you
today's
really...
Today's President's Day?
Yeah.
That shows you how plugged in I am. No wonder we could do this now.
But, I mean, with it being President's Day is... You know, most of the founding fathers made their money as they came here by owning mass amounts of slaves.
Right.
Like, yeah, it's great. I mean, we have Independence Day to celebrate, you know, our nation's birth, but those early presidents
weren't always the greatest of people.
Yeah, they weren't the best people.
Right.
So, and I laugh when, you know, we look so much back on them. We were founded on a Christian nation and things like that. And it's like, no, actually, Thomas Jefferson was an extreme atheist and wrote his own scriptures.
Yeah.
Like, so, no, we weren't quite founded on
right.
on that. And I think it's just silly that, you know, so many days get that Hallmark attention instead.
Yep.
And, I mean, to be able to get away from that. And, like, our anniversaries even, you know, almost a month after Valentine's Day. And I was like, you know, we do something more special for our anniversary than for Valentine's. But even then,
as you should.
Yeah, as we should. But even then, it's just like, yep, chalk another one up. Like,
what kind of stuff do you guys like doing together?
So, I mean, it'll be anything from, you know, just simply going to a movies and relaxing together, you know, going to a hotel for a weekend just to relax.
Mm.
I mean, more or less just to kind of put aside all the cares and just be able to just spend time, you know, relaxing and enjoying each other.
Relaxing is the best.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the times, I mean, like I said, you know, comedy's become a big part of our relationship and the way that we'll just riff off of each other.
Mm.
So, and especially as my wife has even started to watch At Midnight, mm-hmm. like when they play the hashtag game.
Yeah.
It's like, that's something that has become almost like a bonding thing for us where we will sit there for an hour after the show coming up with just hashtags. Ridiculous hashtags. and I mean, it's something that just comes from relaxing. That, you know, we can kind of shut our brains off from everything else and enjoy it. That's so, great. And it's... Yeah, I mean, it's been a great thing to be able to look at it that way. So, now as you guys, after, you know, talking with the family from Sister Wives, you know, aside from, you know, just the basic, you know, husband-wife relationship, what other kind of experiences did you guys have when looking at love stories? I mean, did you have very many gay couples that you interviewed?
We interviewed, like, three gay couples. That was really, I mean... The only difference to me between a gay couple and a straight couple is it's either two dudes or two girls. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the basic principles and the feelings are exactly the same.
Right.
Yeah, it was. I feel like a lot of people give that them a bad rep or a bad rap. Why did I say rep? That makes no sense.
No.
No, we know. Yeah, we interviewed gay couples, we interviewed really religious couples, we interviewed some atheist couples, we interviewed old and young couples, all sorts of different people. I'm trying to think of anything interesting to tell you about the gay couples, since you asked specifically about that.
So, I mean, well, one thing I always think is fascinating is, and I'm sure you've seen this through social media, is mm-hmm. a lot of the times the gay couples that you see out there are almost more proud of their relationships, whether their state recognizes their marriage or not. They are more proud of their relationship than so many, you know, straight couples.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's funny when, you know, when people want to talk about the sanctity of marriage.
Right.
And it's like, if it's so special to you, why are you not, you know, celebrating it and making it? And I've always joked that, you know, people say it's going to ruin the sanctity of marriage. I'm like, really? Because if two, you know, people of the same sex getting married, it's really going to hurt you that much? You've got a lot deeper problems than you realize.
I feel like the conversation around marriage equality needs to change. I feel like the real thing that we need to start talking about is marriage equality in general.
Yeah.
I think that's the real discussion. You take the E off equality and...
I like that.
There's so many people out there who are fighting against gay marriage that have shit relationships themselves. And it's like, I'm fighting for the sanctity of marriage. You know, two men or two women getting married is like, it's wicked and it's disgusting and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, if you're so worried about the sanctity of marriage, why aren't you worried about your own? You know, why aren't you, you should probably be home with your wife right now.
Yeah. Instead of out trying to ruin
somebody else's life. But yeah, I think there's definitely a mentality of there's that famous song, the don't it always seem to go, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. And I think there's a lot of people in the gay community that, because there's so much of a focus on them not being able to, there's a lot of stigma around promiscuity and a lot of a stigma around, like, obviously them not being able to be married. I think it makes them appreciate that type of long-term relationship maybe a little bit more than most people, because it's just so commonplace for us, for straight people.
Yeah, and I mean, when back in December when Judge Shelby struck it down here in Utah, saying that, you know, the amendment was unconstitutional, I don't think I've ever read something as it popped up on my phone. I don't think I've ever read something that hit me as strongly as that did.
Right.
And like, I actually got tears in my eyes as I read it, because I was just like, holy shit, like, I get that this is, you know, something that's changing historically for the state of Utah, but thinking about all of my friends that I know that all of a sudden had that opportunity.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've always been, you know, very, very vocal and very pro gay marriage, or, you know, really it's just called marriage. But I mean, to really be able to feel and know that your friends are going to be able to have that same happiness.
Right.
I mean, it,
and just recognition.
Yeah. And just the recognition alone, but it was just an incredible feeling to be able to see it really start to come together.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, it's a moment I will never forget.
Especially in a place like this, it's so super conservative and traditional, and I guess quote unquote traditional.
Yeah.
Christian traditional. It's really cool to see that type of mindset really open up. But one thing I didn't actually know, I just learned recently, is that Salt Lake, I think, has the highest concentration per capita of gay people than any other city in the country.
Yeah, I think I saw that come out probably about 6-7 months ago.
Yeah, like San Francisco, Orlando, and Salt Lake have like are the top 3 cities in the country that, at least per capita, that have a population of gay people.
So, and even, you know, it's funny because, you know, with us being such a conservative state, most people would never think that.
Right.
But even with the way that, you know, kind of going back to the way that, like, we're programmed and raised, is that, I mean, there's also been studies that have come out to show that, you know, Salt Lake leads the nation, or Utah at least leads the nation in porn subscriptions.
Yeah.
And I think that comes down to the fact of the way that so much, you know, within relationships and love is repressed.
Yeah. And I think medicated, don't we also lead the country in number of,
prescription medications,
like for mental stuff, like depression and all that. Yeah. I think that speaks a lot about our culture. At least in Utah, I don't know how wide your audience is,
but we reach everywhere. I mean, there's people in LA, you know, right now that are probably like, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Utah's a really interesting place. There's a lot of really conservative people here who bottle a lot of stuff up. And I feel like, so LA, you know, if you go out and hang out with people, you go out and get drinks. And a lot of people, that culture doesn't really exist in Utah, at least not as prominently as in most other big cities. Here, our addiction is like, I don't know, probably like dessert. There's so many dessert places out here, you know, or it's like sexually casual sex in more liberal cities isn't like a big deal, like a hookup or whatever, a one night stand, or even just sex before marriage. I don't think the words premarital sex exist in like big cities like New York and California. It's just sex.
Probably not.
Yeah. But you come to Utah and it's premarital sex, and that's like a big deal.
Yeah.
And so people repress a lot of those, a lot of those outlets that most people normally get, and I think that they manifest themselves in really private, quiet ways, which end up being like porn, which you typically most people do in the quiet solitude of their own bedroom, and like going to see a therapist and getting prescription medications for the feelings that you're feeling that may for some people be completely natural, but you just don't have a way of coping with them because you're shamed if you have them. So
yeah, and I think it even, by masking, you know, your normal feelings, it builds up a lot, you know, it calluses over your reality. And I think that's what causes, you know, a lot of problems down the road. Like we said, you know, there's building blocks to all of those issues. And yeah, I mean, if you're just putting a Band-Aid over it over and over and
we're
over again.
We're pretty heavy, aren't we?
I guess we are.
This is pretty heavy stuff. I mean, I've seen that in my own life, though. Like, yeah. I've seen how my inability to talk about things that I was going through have made me bottle up a lot of issues. And a lot of that stuff came out on this road trip, which was probably not super easy for Melissa. I think, I mean, similarly, she had a lot of things that she confronted as well. But like I didn't realize how much I depended on having the label of being a nice guy. Like I would lie to people and I would manipulate people just so I could keep that nice guy thing, because that's how I identified myself. And I felt like it would be wrong for me to lose that image if it meant I had to hurt somebody and be honest with them, like just straightforward. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense, because I mean, I think if I look at myself in the past, I kind of had that same idea where I didn't want to hurt somebody. Right. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be upfront with them or I'd patronize them. And now I look at it and it's just like...
But the reason for not wanting to hurt them wasn't because you cared so much about them. It was more that you cared about your own image.
Yeah, I wanted to be the nice guy. Yeah. I wanted to be the guy that people are like, oh, he's great. And it's like, no, sometimes you have to be the dick.
Yeah.
So, and that's just, I mean, that's just the way life goes. I mean, it's not all puppies and rainbows all the time.
Yeah, it was so great. I had this, I've kind of been dating this girl, and we had a conversation even last night. I hope it's okay that I'm talking about this. I don't need to say who she is. But, like, things weren't going super great, and I called her up, and I'm like, hey, I don't know if you've noticed, but things aren't going super great. And she's like, yeah, I noticed. What do you think we should do? And I was like, well, this isn't really the type of relationship I want. Is it the type of relationship you want? She's like, not really. We're just really honest about it. And yeah. We're like, okay, well, can we still be like friends and check in on each other? Yeah, totally. That sounds great. So we're not dating anymore? No, that's cool. And like, it was done. Whereas in the past, I would have had to make up this whole backstory and like try and make up something that like made it about me and not them, or made it about something that was completely
different. It's not
you, it's me. Yeah. Or like, oh yeah, there's just a situation, or I just don't feel like it's working out. But really, like, why can't you just be honest and be like, hey, this isn't really what I'm looking for, and for these reasons, and like that's totally okay. It doesn't, you know, and just be honest.
And I mean, honestly, I think I'm friends still with every ex-girlfriend I've ever had, as weird as that may seem to some people. But yeah, I've never had that, you know, breakup where it's just like, screw you,
yeah,
you know, I hate you. Like, it's always just kind of been like, you know, yeah, this isn't gonna work out.
The worst stuff happens when you're a jerk.
Yeah.
Or not a jerk, when you lie.
Yeah.
Lies will always come back to catch you. Always. It's just a matter of time. And they caught up to me recently, and that was like the big realization. Is like, holy crap, I didn't realize I've been lying. I didn't realize it. I had no idea. I had been the nice guy, and that turned me into a giant bag of douche. Like, I was actually just a giant liar. I was two-faced, and I was not being cool to people. And I had no idea, because I was nice. I was the nice guy, right? And the nice guy can't be the douchebag. Totally false.
Yeah.
I am the perfect representation of the nicest douchebag you'll ever meet.
I remember probably 5-6 years ago when I had somebody written an online comment about me. And I didn't know the person at all. And it was in relation to some touring stuff that I was doing with some music, where somebody was like, yeah, he's just an absolute, you know, asshole. Like, I'm glad that he's, you know, not. And I was like,
you're up.
But I thought I was always being like, and it was kind of like I had to look back and I was like, yeah, I can see how. And so, I mean, it took, you know, kind of growing a pair to, you know, go back to some of those people and be like, you know, I'm sorry, this is how things went.
Yeah.
And you know, really, really own up to some of the things that I had done. And
yeah.
And make myself not be so guarded and be, I mean, granted, I still always have my shields up. So getting really Star Wars nerdy isn't looking at Star Wars posters, but I mean,
that's the best kind of nerd right there, man.
But I mean, I always still have my shields up, but at the same time, you know, knowing how to let people in and just be real with them.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that's hard to learn, but when you can grasp it and make that part of who you are.
Yep.
It'll change you and everybody around you for the better.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Nobody wants to be around somebody they can't trust to tell them to be straight with them. It's way easier. It's way better to be able to own it when you screw up and just apologize than it is to like try and build an immaculate or a complicated story around it and I don't know what I'm talking about.
It'll eventually bite you is basically what we're saying here.
So. Delicious. That kind of, you know.
So now with everything with the Loveumentary, I mean, you do the podcast with it.
Yeah.
And from what I heard, you guys have put together a book with it. Is that?
Yeah, Melissa's writing a book right now. Whatever comes next. I would love to go back out and do. I mean, Melissa didn't obviously. Melissa's focus is she loves startups. She loves publications and stuff like that. So she just got a great job in San Francisco, working with a great company out there. But for me, I want to pursue the relationship space, and I would love to like take a video crew out one day, hopefully. Yeah. But I'd like to retrace my steps and go across the country again and interview more couples and film a documentary about it, or a TV show, or maybe write a book one day myself. Or I mean, there's a million different things. Keep the podcast going. I don't know exactly what's next for me, but I'm loving what's happening right now, and I think the world is kind of craving a little bit of happy love stories instead of all the sad, disappointing ones. Yeah.
So and kind of one other last thing I kind of wanted to touch on here too. Now you and another high school friend, Steve Boyer, started.
Yeah.
Or I guess it's getting ready to launch.
Yeah.
The Unboxed Love.
Yep. That's kind of a big deal right now.
I saw, you know, a few different news stations had done a little bit on this. So, I mean, tell me a little bit more about this. I think it's a really fascinating idea.
Yeah, it was really kind of, it was just weird how it all happened. We were having a conversation, and my mind obviously has been in the relationship space a lot lately, and Steve was talking about one of his sisters that got married, and his other sister made for their wedding present like a box of 12 dates, and they open one date a month, and they just have like really enjoyed that. And we started talking, and Steve, or I don't remember who it was, but we basically said, could we turn that into a subscription service? So essentially that's what we've done is we threw up a website 2 weeks ago and decided to try and collect some email addresses to see if anybody would be interested. And if they would, maybe we'd do a test run. And it caught on. We weren't prepared. We've got a couple hundred signups, and then almost overnight we got thousands of signups. And so now we have like a couple thousand people knocking on our door saying, you know, hey, we want this monthly date in a box thing. And the idea is that like a lot of couples, especially couples as they start having kids, and you know, you've got work, you've got, you know, PTA meetings, you're running kids to practices, you're just all over the place, your plate's really full. You don't have a whole lot of time to really think about spending time with each other. Like if you're lucky enough to get a date night a week, or sometimes just one a month, typically you're so exhausted and burned out that it might end up just being the same dinner and a movie that you do every single week or month. It just gets repeated. And our idea was like, well, what if we could just have this box sit there, and when they're ready to have their date night, instead of going off and doing the thing they always do, they get to experience something new together. Because novelty and introducing something exciting and different into your relationship actually promotes growth. You know, so we decided to start designing some dates and see if people, obviously they're interested now, but we're going to start shipping them out hopefully in the next month or so, and see how they go. So the idea is to give couples something that will allow them to like spark some conversation, do something creative, serve one another, essentially give them an opportunity to experience something new and exciting so that it can kind of maybe rekindle that, the fun that they had when they were best friends when they started dating. You know, they couldn't get enough of each other, and help them forget about the humdrum responsibilities and monotony of daily life.
That's a really cool idea. And I mean, how much are you guys going to be charging for the service?
We didn't want to charge any more than a typical date night. Like if you did dinner and a movie, it would cost about $50. So that's what we decided to set the price at about $50.
And are you guys going to be getting a lot of sponsors behind it to help provide
I hope so.
Products and stuff?
I would love it if people out there thought, if they had a product they thought would fit, they're more than happy to reach out and talk to us. So we've got some really cool ideas that were like, part of it is a lot of people are like, hey, what are you guys going to put in the boxes? Like, give us some examples. And we decided early on.
Alcohol and poor judgment.
Yes.
That's what we're putting in the boxes.
Alcohol and poor judgment. You're going to be regretting, opening this box. But we don't want to tell people, because I think when you know what you're getting, it kind of takes the excitement out of it. So a lot of it's going to be surprises, and we hope that the experience of just opening the box and seeing what's inside is going to be half the fun. So.
And I think it'd be funny as you guys get these regular subscribers that as you keep track of how long they've been with you, like 9 months, just as a joke, send them a pacifier in the box.
Just the first date went so well.
Yeah, the first date went so well. And just see if they catch on.
It's like
that.
The second honeymoon baby. It's like, the unboxed love baby.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, that'd be so funny to see. See if they'd catch on to that.
I'm totally going to do that now. A congratulations.
Yeah, I used to always, as my as friends would get married, I'd actually buy them like a congratulations baby card.
Uh-huh.
And give them that as their wedding card. That's instead awesome. Of a regular wedding card.
That's so great.
So, but our, I think it's funny too that, you know, you mentioned that like Steve's sister had this going.
Because
my wife and I, our gift that we give to like all of our friends and family when they get married is usually a date night.
Yeah.
So we'll get a movie and like popcorn, and we'll go and get, you know, a bunch of Kool-Aid and stuff so they can start their diabetes early.
Right.
And just get it going.
Yeah.
And so I love that idea because that's always been our idea too.
That's great.
You know, yeah, no, a lot of couples are so stressed with that sometimes, yeah, you just need to decompress and have that date night.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's totally planned out for them.
Yeah. Like, it makes it easy.
Yeah. We just need a night to ourselves. Boom. Guess what? It's in a box right here. I got it for you.
I love that. Well, you know, I'm so glad to see everything's been going so well for you guys. I mean, you guys have been all over the place.
I want
to
do a Dick in the Box parody now. Date in a Box.
Just send that with the first one.
Yeah.
And just have it as something special for the husband.
How do I get Justin Timberlake involved? Is Andy Samberg busy? I really want to shoot a music video, guys.
Oh, that would be epic to do a music video for that.
Step one.
But I mean, you guys have been on ABC Nightly News.
Recently,
Business Insider, The Atlantic. You were on the front page of Reddit and had this impromptu AMA.
We were on the front page of Good Morning America one day. We've been in really big publications like Good Men Project and Positively Positive. We've been really fortunate to have some great press. So
it's always exciting. I mean, nothing thrills me more to see people that, like, I grew up with, like, you know, living out their dreams and just like exploding out there and you know, just, you know, succeeding in what they love. So I mean, nothing is more exciting than that. So
feelings mutual.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see this continually going well. And where can everybody find you? I mean, you have loveyoumentory.com.
Uh-huh.
You guys are on Facebook.
Yep.
Where else can they find you?
You can go to facebook.com/loveyoumentory, Twitter, same thing, or if you go to unboxlove.com, same thing applies. facebook.com/unboxlove, no spaces or dashes.
Perfect. And we'll throw all the links up on our website too, so they can access it.
If you want to follow me personally, it's just Big Bags on Twitter.
Perfect. I like that. That's a good Twitter handle.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, and happy President's Day.
Happy President's Day to you too. Let's go celebrate.
We can go get a mattress. I think I hear there's some good mattress deals today.
I don't know if I want to go mattress shopping with you. As much as I like you, man, we do have a great history, but mattress shopping is not the way I want to cap off my day.
See, I've always thought, you know, if there's going to be one holiday that they should have a mattress sell on, it should be Martin Luther King Day because he had a dream.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
So it makes sense.
Would we be shopping for separate mattresses or for one to share? I guess that's where I went wrong.
Well, see, now if it's Sleep Number, it could be one to share, but technically it's like separate mattresses.
Okay.
Yeah.
As long as I get Little Spoon.
Okay. Well, I can guarantee that.
All right.
Well, thanks again, Nate.
Yeah, man.
Everybody go check out The Loveyoumentary and Unbox Love.